The number one source of rock and talk radio. Rock and talk radio. Here on STRN Radio. Here on STRN Radio.
Welcome to Conspiracy with your host Earl Benazet and my special guest this evening, David Cerita. David Cerita was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada on August 21st, 1961, and he became a permanent resident of the United States of America with his family in 1964, and he grew up in the state of California. David Cerita's first aspiration in life was to become an astronaut. He kept a scrapbook of every Apollo mission while growing up in Berkeley, San Francisco, California in the 1960s. In approximately 1968, while David was on his way home from elementary school in Berkeley, California, he and his friend Tommy witnessed a large, classic, disc-shaped UFO hovering in a clear blue sky with hundreds of witnesses shouting with excitement in the streets, all pointed upwards in utter amazement. After 20 minutes to half an hour witnessing this UFO, David said he saw it literally disappear in 1 second into another invisible dimension. And we now know there's at least 11 dimensions, possibly a lot more than that. David said he saw it literally disappear. Okay, with a permanent and affected memory, David grew up as a UFO enthusiast, never living in doubt of the phenomenon that has swept the world since the Roswell incident in 1947. His interest in space, religion, philosophy, astronomy, and science led him on his career in related fields. He's worked deeply in high technology on environmental and humanitarian issues and has a professional photographer for over 20 years. He has studied world religion, science, physics, and paranormal psychology for over 25 years on virtually hundreds of issues. Well, I could go on and on. There's a lot more here, but welcome, David.
Good to be with you, Earl.
I've been interested to have you on my show for quite a while because of mainly the way I got interested to you. It was the evidence for case for NASA UFOs, which I've shown to hundreds of people, thousands of people, really. I've probably shown it about 500 times. So tell us, what would you like to talk about tonight?
Well, there's really a lot of subjects. You know, I mean, since then, I've produced a lot of new films. Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs, which was more of a mainstream, and just a look at, you know, Dan Aykroyd's mind into the subject, and doing my own research in the background and practicing meditation every day for 30 years. And I did two DVDs in the last couple of years, The Voice and Quantum Communication, where we kind of mixed, you know, people's mystical experiences with science at major universities like Princeton, Harvard, Berkeley, and Stanford, and you know, many, many more researchers from top universities on what they're discovering about the power of consciousness and what is the true meaning of authentic enlightenment and the nine or more greater levels of the field. You know, when we talk about this field of consciousness that permeates, you know, from the auras of subatomic particles to atoms to plants to human beings, and then you get into auras of planetary proportions, where at Princeton University, Dr. Roger Nelson, who appeared in my film The Voice, was giving us a presentation about how they had been studying the actual aura of the Earth using random event generators for over 25 years. And then you get into the auras of cosmic consciousness, which are fields of consciousness that extend beyond the nine planets and go into the galaxy. And you literally can tap into these spheres, these giant rings of consciousness with your mind, but it takes hours and hours and hours and sometimes lifetimes of meditation practice to be able to actually experience it. And I started having very, very deep experiences. And, you know, going back to my UFO sighting in Berkeley, you know, the whole UFO phenomena interests me so much because we're just these kind of organic human beings living on a planet. We have telescopes now, like the Hubble, that are so good. We can see our place in the universe is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And all of our religions have failed in the past to give us a true vision of just how big the cosmos really is. I mean, a galaxy today is far bigger than a universe, even in the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, or definitely the Bible, whether it's the ancient Hebrew or the Christian knowledge of a cosmos. There's just no one back then who had any idea how big this thing really gets. And, you know, to see a flying saucer that's defying gravity, that's silent, that's hovering right over the Berkeley, you know, campus, and, you know, bird's eye view of the Lawrence Berkeley, you know, National Lab up on the space lab there, it really changed my life. It's not enough to attain yogic cosmic consciousness and go into different levels of samadhi or superconscious, which I've been able to do. I have had this desire to take knowledge from my dialogue with the cosmos to give us that same freedom. I mean, it's unimaginable. Wow. To me that we're, like, here we are. I mean, Obama is ending the space shuttle program. He's calling for, you know, more aggressive approaches to alternative propulsion, but they don't even know what that means. And there's no money being thrown at exotic researchers into anti-gravity work to take it to a much higher level so that we can become as free as these beings are.
As far as the public knows, anyway.
As far as the public knows, but, you know, I believe we have the technology. I believe a lot of the UFOs are ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a huge mistake for a president to turn his back on the space program. But at the same time, you know, it's partially NASA. It is NASA's fault, because NASA keeps hiding. Every time there's a sliver of evidence,
yep,
that there are UFOs out there, they're capturing them on their cameras, they always deny, deny, deny. So it looks so boring. Like, oh, there's nobody here but us. And I know the top people there don't believe that. Mm-hmm. But that's the image they give the public. And now the public has, you know, for the most part, lost their fascination with space, because they keep telling us there's nobody out there. And that's how they failed. That's why there's no support, and there's not an overwhelming majority of support to keep the space program alive. And here we have a president who's saying, I'm going to bail out all the richest bankers of the world and make them richer at a time of an economic crisis, and comptrollers are giving themselves $1 to $4 billion annual salaries, which is, you know, unheard of.
Insane,
in the history,
yeah,
of America. And they're saying there's no money for space. Well, the whole failure of NASA has been what I have been fighting them on, is, hey, you guys, look, here in evidence the case for NASA UFOs, I have verified, and I still have the original letterhead, that the cameras they used on those missions on STS-75 and so forth, the black and white cameras, can clearly see into the near and the far ultraviolet, where human eyes don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And me being beckoned with my experience with the UFO in 1968 in Berkeley, it disappeared. It didn't accelerate. It was clearly metallic, in a little dome on the top, and everybody saw it. It was down low, and it made no noise. It shimmered kind of like liquid mercury. It wasn't blurry. It wasn't a blob like you see in a lot of video cameras. Mm-hmm. It was too close.
It was probably still there, just between the molecules.
It just disappeared. And so when something goes invisible, and then you become aware of, you know, of course, human beings only see from red, you mm-hmm. know, through the rainbow spectrum, all the, you know, familiar colors to violet, but we don't see ultraviolet near, ultraviolet far, and ultraviolet extreme, and we certainly don't see X-rays and gamma rays. And there I am, you know, meditating. I've done Buddhist retreats where you sit in meditation 12 hours a day, even sitting, and
wow,
getting up every hour and stretching your legs, and so painful and so hard to do. But eventually, in the year 1994, and, you know, that was very many, many years into my practice, I had received blinding apparitions of Jesus Christ, where he was shining like thousands of suns and just raining cosmic love and ecstasy on me. And with, you know, to make a long story short, from that day on, I began seeing ghosts and spirits and even extraterrestrials with my eyes open, full 3D, not intuiting a mental picture, not a psychic internal kind of composition of data. I could see them in the 3D space and even put my hands through them. And I see them with such perfection, I can see every thread in their garment. I mean, every little detail.
It's amazing.
And they're glowing. And when that happens to you, you realize, okay, I'm not crazy. This happened through a state of cosmic consciousness. When I meditate more and more and more, I see them more. I still see them. I've seen hundreds. I've seen, you know, spheres of light, that balls of light appear in front of me of three different colors and telling me what star system they're from. And I've seen Princess Diana the day after she died in the daytime. I saw her with utter perfection, perfect clear in my room, you know, at the corner of the bed. And I saw her, I put my head under the covers, lifted the covers. Half an hour later, she's still there. And
I don't want to stop you right now, but I have to. Got to take a break, David, but we'll be right back. Really fascinating. I can't wait to hear more. I will be back in just a few minutes with Conspiracy with my host, David Cerita.
Are you in a band or know somebody who is? Looking for radio play?
Go to MusicSubmit.com.
MusicSubmit.com is a band's best friend. You can submit your music to radio stations, online music magazines, online music directories, blogs, podcasts, and indie record labels. Go to MusicSubmit.com and create your own artist account. Upload your songs, pictures, links, and videos. Then submit yourself for free to any site you want. Check out their submission packages. This is huge. Go to MusicSubmit.com right now.
You're listening to the Desert Heat, KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benazet, and my special guest, David Cerita. Pleasure talking to you, David. I'm learning a lot here. We're talking offline. Why don't you continue what you were saying there?
Well, we're talking about, you know, after years and years and years of meditation, you know, practicing meditation, in 1994, I had one of the most profound mystical experiences of my life, where literally, I mean, I met Jesus Christ in person, shining like, you know, a thousand suns, so bright you could barely look at him, and so much cosmic consciousness and ecstasy raining down on my field. And I mean, it's unimaginable to me. I was Buddhist, I was practicing Buddhism, even though I was baptized Catholic as a baby, and our family had no continuation of Catholic practices. I was just so blown away what's happening to my consciousness in the presence of Christ. I mean, I could talk about that for hours and hours and hours. But what happened from that day on, I began seeing ghosts perfectly clearly, and I've seen hundreds and hundreds of ghosts. I've seen, you know, three spheres of light floating right in front of me in the middle of the night that I can put my hands through, and they're telling me they're from the star system of Arcturus, which I had never even heard of, the star system of Arcturus at that time. Mm-hmm. I'd seen Princess Diana in broad daylight when I was waking up in my room, and she was sitting in the corner of the room with a soft, milky white light around her and wearing a white shirt and looking totally blown away just the day after she died. And I couldn't believe it was really her sitting there in the room, so I hid under the cover. And I said, this can't be happening. And I lifted the covers. Half an hour later, she's still there. She's in my room. She wants to communicate to me.
Wow.
And when it was happening, Earl, it was constant. I was seeing so many people who had just died, and I was seeing people that no one's ever heard of before. And then I was seeing extraterrestrials. And, you know, again, practicing meditation every day. But the point is, why could David Cerita suddenly see invisible beings? And it brought me back to my UFO experience in Berkeley in 1968, where the UFO just disappeared. It went invisible. Mm-hmm. Now, this fascination with the invisible eventually led me into investigating space shuttle footage provided to me by Martin Stubbs, who was my partner. Mm-hmm. He was the one who had archived all of the space shuttle footage. And we were seeing, you know, orbs of light and balls of light in the STS-75 tether incident. And I wanted to know right away, this, you know, being a professional photographer for 20 years, something looked strange about the footage. It looked like it was invisible photography. So I started writing letters to Joseph Nuth III, the head of NASA's astrochemistry branch, and I got an absolute confirmation from him right down to the nanometer where the camera was seeing.
Wow.
It was not an off-the-shelf camera, as James Oberg contested. James Oberg knows utterly nothing about this. I mean,
knows, and he's not going to say, so.
Yeah, he acts like he's a big expert, and he really, you know, worked in Houston Control. He doesn't know everything about what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I got the letterhead of the make and the model of the camera, and it is not an off-the-shelf camera. It was a contracted camera, and it was definitely a camera that was designed under contract to see into the invisible spectra of light in the near and the far ultraviolet, where no human eyes can see. But there I was, I can see the invisible, and I know what things look like in the invisible, and there is a difference in the way they behave, the way they move. There's a different perception of time things seem to be very slowed down in the invisible. And so I got absolute confirmation that those cameras can look into the invisible. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that if you, you know how video cameras work, and I use them professionally, and I have been using them for over 10 years, the video cameras. And I've done tests where you put, like, you know, if you put a little drop of water on the lens filter, and you're unzoomed and you look at the drop of water, you can see the depth of field on video cameras is so good, how deep the field of focus is, that the drop of water and a tree, you know, 100 yards in the background are both in focus at the same time. Mm-hmm. So when NASA was saying, unzoomed, that the objects you're seeing are out of focus orbs of light due to a depth of field problem, that's impossible with the CCD video camera. Mm-hmm. And then if you take the drop of water on the lens filter with your video camera today and you zoom all the way in on a distant object, the drop of water disappears. You can't see it anymore. And what's amazing, the tether incident, is you zoom in and they're still there, which means they're distant objects. Mm-hmm. They're nowhere near the camera lens. They're not inside the shuttle bay. They're not, you know, cookie crumbs floating around inside of the shuttle bay getting in front of the lens. No way. That's impossible, because they would not survive the zoom.
And as I like to say, you know, 300 pieces or 200 and something pieces, 2.5 to 3 miles across of engine effluent. Come on, NASA.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have this long tether. It's 12 miles long. And according to NASA's own data, the nitrogen fuel tank was emptied. And they don't even know how that happened, because you need a controller to do that. And then the nitrogen gas gathered around the electrostatic field around the tether and became ionized. That's why it appears to be roughly a half a mile thick and 12 miles long, because it's a big neon tube. And the UFOs are, okay, they're all flying around out there, and they're pulsing, and I freeze-frame the pulses, and there's clear, you know, Fibonacci wave spirals in them. And so that work has been done, and that's, you know, I don't want to talk too much about that. But today, in my new work, I have an ebook at voiceentertainment.net called Quantum Electrodynamics in 2012. And what I do in this study is I superimpose our solar system, our sun and our planet, as if it were the size of a subatomic particle, you know, proton, mm-hmm. electron, anti-electron, proton, anti-proton, and all the orbits the subatomic particles make. And in that study, you realize what is going to happen when you understand our position in the galaxy, our sun's position in the galaxy, as it's migrating in this spiraling wave pattern. Every 240 million years, it goes around the galaxy, and it will make 90 degrees to that. It will make 4 or 5 64 million year sideways spirals. They dip below galactic plane and north of galactic plane. What's amazing about that is that our present position is 180 trillion miles, 10 parsecs above the galactic plane right now. Where that's the true galactic plane, but we're just starting to come out of the dust of the thickness of the line of the galactic plane, and I think that's what the Maya prophecy talks about. Now, what's amazing about this is that the University at Kansas, a Russian and an American astrophysicist, study the fossil record and find all the mass extinction level events, and sure enough, we are exactly where the dinosaurs were when they went extinct 64 million years ago, 10 parsecs north of the galactic plane. When our solar system and sun were south of the galactic plane, the temperatures coming from galactic center are very weak for some reason. When we're inside of the galactic cloud of the thickness of the line of the galactic plane, the temperatures are so low that it's very good for organic life and, you know, little microbes and cells and humans to evolve. But as soon as you get north of it, there's so much more cosmic energy coming from galactic center, it transfers its electromagnetic energy to our sun, and our sun becomes very, very active as it spews out huge amounts of energy and transforms the planets, the nine planets in the solar system. So I started looking at the sun. I mean, like the stock market every day on the NASA SOHO WASCO, you know, telescope.
One question, David, is the sun is getting hotter, isn't it? And it's making our planets warmer?
Well, the sun is right now, we went to a huge solar minimum, which is every 11 years the sun goes into solar minimum and then it comes out and goes into solar maximum for about the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is these cameras that NASA has look into the visible and the invisible ultraviolet of the sun. And what I was finding is it's so obvious where we're going through the galactic orbit that a huge amount of energy is going to transfer from the galactic center to the sun, and it's just starting now. Mm-hmm. And the sun is going to have to release it to the Earth. And because the Earth got so cold in this last solar minimum, which is why we were seeing snow in Texas and, you know, in Georgia, mm-hmm. and all these strange places, mm-hmm. it's like if you stick a cold ice cube suddenly in a hot cup of coffee, the ice cube will crack because there's too big of a temperature difference. Mm-hmm. I even took my cold quartz crystal and put it in my hot tub, which is only 102 degrees, and it cracked the rock. Wow. Now, if you put a warm crystal in hot water, it doesn't crack. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the large temperature difference. So we had no sunspots, Earl, for 10 months.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
that's amazing.
Last September, around the 28th or so, we had our first sunspot, big one, and it was facing Earth when it was flaring. We had earthquakes in American Samoa, and we had tsunamis that killed hundreds of people. And I went, oh, my God, is that a coincidence? And I kept watching, you know, no sunspots again for a while, and then all of a sudden sunspots started real popping up.
Have you seen the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage?
We're starting to get there because a lot of people are tuning into the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And when Haiti happened, there was a big whopper of a sunspot facing Earth. Now, the sun is spinning around every 25 days, so the sunspots don't necessarily flare when they're facing Earth, and if they don't, it's not that bad. But when you have a freezing cold planet and sudden burst of electromagnetism, you're going to get a strong reaction. And then Haiti happened, and then at the UFO Congress in Nevada in the 26th of February, 24th of February, it's in that week.
Mm-hmm.
It started on the 22nd of February. I told the owner, Bob Brown, there was a huge eruption on the sun. And I said, it's going to take 3 days for this eruption on the sun to get to the Earth. And I said, watch out, because this is a huge eruption. Sure enough, 3 days later, Chile happened, the 8.8 in Chile.
Wow.
And since then, I've been watching all the solar activity. And sure enough, on NASA's ultraviolet cameras, you're seeing UFOs. And these UFOs, again, because they're in the ultraviolet, they're probably not visible to the human eye. A person like me who can see invisible data could probably see them in my deep state of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sent you an email of what looked like, I mean, this thing is so big, there's no way to tell between the SOHO cameras and the actual sun how far the distance between the object is. But it looks like two gold wedding bands kind of wrapped into each other, two rings, and you can see the shine on it and everything. And I went, oh my God, that looks like the contraption from the movie Contact. Remember the movie Contact
yeah.
with Joe Foster, the
yeah.
big spinning ring?
And it's the clearest picture I've seen of the sun showing an object like that. I mean, they had the other SOHO pictures, which are kind of red and bright white for the sun, and you'd see an object in bright white, but this has a lot more detail.
It has a lot of what you're seeing, this double ring, and you can see the shine on it and everything. Well, the date on that was, on the SOHO camera, was February 1st. And news broke out on February 1st of another object, February 2nd, February 1st, and that was all over the papers, and it looked like this comet-like thing streaking in, but it was above Earth's atmosphere, so it shouldn't be streaking, and it has two interlaced rings that are 90 degrees to each other, exactly like the object on the sun. But this object was nowhere near the sun. This object was you know, observable by telescopes, regular telescopes.
Kind of like the video that you have in Evidence the Case for NASA UFOs, where you see the Earth to the left, and you see objects streaking by a couple of hundred miles out you know, and there's no atmosphere there, so.
But the thing about the object we're talking about here, and Richard Hoagland and Michael Barrow were going crazy over this, is it a UFO? It was all over the news, and if you can post that on your website, people can see it. Mm-hmm. And it was the same as the object on the sun, but the size of this object is probably as big as our planet in reality, the object that's near the sun, or you know, somewhere between the moon and Earth. It's hard to tell the size because you don't know how far it is away from the camera.
Would you say it's possible that an extraterrestrial civilization is trying to help us calm the sun down so it doesn't hurt the Earth?
This is what gets really interesting. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The timing and the concert of the radical transformation of our sun, and then you start going into studying why ancient cultures, the ancient Egyptians and the Maya, worshipped the sun, not as God, but knowing that they could have a dialogue with it. Our bodies are made mostly, you know, 87% water, which is hydrogen and oxygen, and minerals. The sun is made of about the same percentage of hydrogen and trace oxygen and trace minerals. It's the same stuff as us. Well, in my film Quantum Communication, an MIT physicist, Dr. Claude Swanson, shows a study that was done by an acupuncturist who had the needles connected to the human nervous system, and they connected voltmeters to the needles. Mm-hmm. And while they were watching the normal fluctuations in the human nervous system, which I've done studies on hundreds and hundreds of people myself, they noticed this sudden massive voltage spike. And it turns out when they measured the satellite time to the voltage spike on the subject, it was the exact time that an X-class solar flare left the sun. Hmm. And what's amazing about that is this, you know, talking on a radio waves travel at the speed of light, it would take 8.3 minutes for radio waves to get from the sun to the Earth. But the human nervous system experienced the information on the sun faster than light. And so what that told us is that it's very clear, because there have been more experiments that have confirmed that our consciousness, through Einstein's spooky action at a distance, can communicate with distant bodies that are entangled in a relationship mm-hmm. faster than light.
Wow.
And that means we can communicate with the sun. If the sun could send us a message and we got it in real time rather than the delay of the speed of light, then, oh my God, we could talk to the sun. And that gave me the realization that what we need to do, because here we are, we're having earthquakes all over the place. I mean, if, just in the past week, of course, last weekend we had the big one in southern, you know, Baja California. And let me tell you a story about Baja California. My friend Michael Mann, who works in the film business, and he's in my film The Voice, and he phoned me and said 2 weeks before the Baja quake, he was in Big Bear, California skiing, and he has a dream. This is 2 weeks before the Baja quake last weekend. Mm-hmm. And he's on an alien spaceship, and they're dragging this magnetic technology like a giant barge because they're moving earthquake energy around because it's building around California.
Wow.
Well, it turns out that exact time, Caltech put out an article that was on the KTLA News that they were seeing a lot of earthquake activity in the Salton Sea near Baja California, and they were predicting a huge earthquake would hit the LA area, possibly causing $200 billion in damage and 1,800 deaths. Now, 2 weeks later, no, during the dream, Michael Mann tells the aliens, can you move the earthquake energy down to Baja, somewhere where not a lot of people are going to get hurt? That was 2 weeks before. Hmm. And sure enough, that's where the earthquake happened. And then he writes me again recently saying that he had a dream he was on the ships again, and this time they told him they're working, but they don't know if they can hold back the energy. It looks like it wants to rip loose or, you know, possibly hit California or Los Angeles. So
it looks like it's that time, David. I've got to take another break, but we'll be right back with David Sreed. I can't wait to hear the rest of this. Stay tuned to Conspiracy, and we'll just take a short break.
The changes in the world today are moving faster than ever before. And it's good to know there's someone who can help keep it all in perspective. Psychic medium and paranormal life consultant and renowned author Rick Hayes can help you get through these tough times. Through prayer, faith, and guidance, Rick Hayes can take you on a path to acknowledge the appreciation of life's gift. Amazing and very real, the best best at what he does, states the producers of the highly acclaimed film, The Possessed. Rick Hayes, founder of Life's Gift Incorporated, offers personal as well as group consultations. As a renowned and well-respected speaker, Rick is available to appear at your next event. For more information, go to www.lifesgift.com. Rick Hayes, living life supernaturally.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Welcome back to Conspiracy, and my guest, David Sarita, who's really enlightening, to say the least. I've kind of sensed there's a lot of energy around us. I didn't know how it can affect us, but we're learning a lot right now. Continue with what you're saying, David.
Yeah, so, you know, we're looking at this idea, firstly, that there are certain human beings that can experience the invisible, whether with their eyes or through dreams. You're looking at real data from NASA, from both the NASA Tether Incident UFO, where we confirm cameras can see into the near and the far ultraviolet, where most humans don't see. And now we're seeing, on February 1st, 2010, ultraviolet invisible photography of the sun. We're seeing a giant, you know, double ring-shaped UFO that is the same shape as the double ring-shaped UFO that broke out all over the news on February 1st, the same day. That was caught up with regular telescopes, and people thought it was a meteor until they realized it was above the Earth's atmosphere, so it couldn't be a meteor burning up on reentry. NASA tried to say it was the collision between two, you know, cometary pieces, which would not produce the kind of geometry you're seeing here.
You know, it's almost like NASA's a spokesman for black ops, you know?
Yeah, NASA, again, you know, we were talking earlier, they've lied about everything, and they wonder why they got their funding cut, because they lost our excitement about space. So it's their own fault. But now you're going into this idea that we're approaching into 2012, and we're seeing so many violent earthquakes all over the planet, which I've been able to predict with sunspot activity. And we're looking at our position as our sun is moving around the galaxy, and we're seeing that it is coming further and further north out of the galactic plane. And when it gets clearly above the galactic plane, the predictions from major astronomers at Kansas State University are that the cosmic radiation levels are going to get very, very high. Now, there's some good news to that, too, because we know from studies, and this is in my film Quantum Communication and another film we have called Water, on my website, also at voiceentertainment.net, and you can see that these studies show that very weak changes in magnetic fields yield profound evolution on the DNA level. Such profound revolutions on the DNA level that we may see human beings being born with higher and higher levels or abilities.
Great.
And this is actually possible. And this is not, you know, hokey science. I mean, they're seeing it with fish. Just subtle changes with weak magnetic fields, huge changes in fish and frogs and other, you know, amphibians and little microorganisms. And of course, they've known this for years, that when you expose fruit fly larvae to radiation, you get all sorts of different types of transformations of the DNA level.
Hey, David, this is kind of out there, but I've always thought that since our brain is electrochemical, that what if a signal was to be sent somehow, some way, whether it be nature or what, or by God, and all of a sudden, instead of using, you know, 1/8 of our brain or whatever, 1/5, all of a sudden we're using 90-something% of our brain.
Well, see, that's kind of what we're talking about here. I mean, why is it that more and more children are being born with abilities to see ghosts and interdimensional beings?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have good cameras that these interdimensional beings are actually showing up on the cameras. So we know these people are not truly schizophrenic. They're actually seeing something that's there that other people don't see.
Right.
And of course, NASA's video cameras in the ultraviolet are seeing UFOs that shouldn't be there because the human eye doesn't see them. So it's opening our minds, you know, and string theory is posing, you know, 11 or more dimensions, like you said at the beginning of the show, and more physicists are starting to realize that, you know, it's true that there's more of the universe, and more of what we're discovering is in the invisible. It's there. You just can't perceive it. But what if sudden burst of energy from galactic center, it may cause some radical transformations with the sun, and you may see a lot of earthquakes as we're coming into 2012. But what if the real transformation is at the DNA level? And that means, it's almost like the movie X-Men, but not that extreme. You know, suddenly there are bands of children who are born with amazing powers. Well, I'm about to have a baby with my wife in October, and we've had a lot of mystical experiences while she's pregnant. Seeing, you know, glowing lights around her and magical children glowing with light in the middle of the night. And I actually have, before we conceived, I saw truly angels flying around her. I actually really saw that.
Wow.
And the first, I mean, they were like Botticelli's, more beautiful, so beautiful you couldn't tell whether they were boys or girls, the faces of the angels.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me, practicing meditation every day, my life is like a science fiction movie. I don't know when I go to sleep every night whether I'm going to see something, but I do a lot of times. And since the year 2004, when Christ first appeared to me, I have seen hundreds of different ghosts, extraterrestrials, and balls of light and things like that. So it
sounds like your life would make a good movie.
It probably would. Or a good reality show.
Well, I hate those reality shows, but
I know.
I think it would be a much more interesting reality show anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, that's where I'm at now. I mean, and for my, the fun part for me is, you know, with my film, The Voice, and quantum communication, you're showing scientific proof of the mystical experience, that, you know, what is an expanded state of consciousness? What happens when your aura merges with the greater levels of the field of the universe? There are scientists like Roger Nelson at Princeton who believe that memory is not actually local to the brain, that through the field, just like radio transmitter receivers, we draw information out of the universe. And that opens up the idea of what is the Akashic record. The Akashic record is an idea that all information and all history is stored. The real history, not as some guy or some woman said it would happen. Actual history is stored in these rings or fields of energy. And if you could scientifically extrapolate that kind of data, then you would know from the trees on Elm Street in Dallas who the shooter was who killed John F. Kennedy. Because that information is stored somewhere.
You know, I can believe that. I really can. Because we now know that in events where there have been trace case research that Ted Phillips has worked on, that if he had the money and if he had the time, because I know he's working over there in Bosnia-Herzegovina with that strange situation going there. I think you probably know about that. That the tree rings are affected when a landing has happened. And when there's trace case, if you check the tree rings, you'll see that it's slowed down growth.
Wow. Oh, no, they feel it. They feel the trees. I mean, I planted trees for 22 years,
mm-hmm.
and I planted 1.3 million trees, probably much more than that even. I'm being conservative.
How did you do that?
Well, if you plant, you work like hell. You're carrying 60 pounds of seedlings around your waist. You've got to do 1,000 to 1,500 a day. It destroys your body. I mean, it's so hard. And, you know, that because you can't make any money if you're planting, you know, 500 a day, which mm-hmm. would be much more reasonable. But 75% of the trees survive and they grow. And so
great.
I've probably got over a million trees of a living forest today that I planted up in British Columbia.
That's a great heritage there.
But you feel the trees. I mean, I've had so many mystical experiences. You know, why did Jesus pray to God under the olive trees, you know, on the Mount of Olives? Why did Buddha become enlightened under the Bodhi tree? You know, why there are so many stories of mystics, you know, like Krishna playing his flute under the trees. And, you know, one of the experiments we did in the film The Voice, a plant researcher named Mylise Abson, she connects electrodes to plants and interfaces them with musical, through a MIDI processor, musical tones. And she finds the plants just automatically on their own, when a person comes near the plant, they just start producing music. They start producing these little tingles, these little, you know, sounds through the interface.
Cool.
And she had an experience in England where she was putting up an installation in the middle of the night at 2 a.m., which is usually when the ghosts come out. all of a sudden the plants were going crazy, but there was nobody there. There wasn't even a person working there. And so she gets this call that, you know, your plants are going crazy. It's 2 a.m. There must be something wrong. So she kept having to redo the wiring and make sure there was nothing wrong. And she did it several times, and it kept happening. And it turns out they found out that this was the place where the last woman was hung in London.
Wow.
And where her ghost has been seen for years in that building. So probably the plants, you know, sense and feel invisible phenomena, which would include UFOs, as you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
They put out little, you know, signals.
That's interesting to know. Wow. Well, let's see. Do you have another book you're writing now, or?
Well, I'm editing a new film now called Hope for Humanity, and it really focuses on, you know, what are the major problems in the world, and the new children that are being born, and some of the gifts that some of these children have, and it really teaches us to take a different look at, you know, rather than, you know, if the knowledge we have today is producing the results we're getting today, and we have bankrupt countries now, we have bankrupt states, you know, we're shutting down our space program, you know, we have to re-look at what it is that we teach each other in our schools and our universities. You have the highest dropout rate in history, and you have children that want to learn, but they don't want to learn what we're teaching them, and they have new ideas. And we're trying to drug them and put them on, you know, all these different antidepressants and ADD drugs. And we're saying, you have the problem. But they're actually saying, no, you have the problem. Because I'm different, and I don't fit into your box. Mm-hmm. And your box doesn't work anyway, because look what it did. And, you know, this is where I really support, you know, Ron Paul, who, much more than Obama, because he wants to take down the central bankers. The bankers are saying there's no money, and you owe us so much money that you don't even have any money. But when you look at what money represents, it's a note to represent the movement of labor, of education, food, good services, labor, you know, building houses, building buildings, making cars. That's what that dollar represents. It even represents an amount of it to make to pay people to think, because that's what we have. We grow enough food to feed the world three times over. So there's no shortage of all the things that money represents. We're actually richer than we've ever been in the history of the world with our ability to produce, to make cars robotically, to even make electric cars and solar panels, and even pay people to think about how are we going to invent anti-gravity and zero-point energy, which we're not spending enough money on. We have all that. The goods and services are there. The person who's doing the anti-gravity device or researching it, all that they need is food, and they need a place to live, and they need, you know, resources. And there's no shortage of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're saying there's so much debt in the banking system that none of those goods and services can move. The food is going to rot. You know, the trees are not going to be, you know, cut down. There's not enough rock to build your house. There's not enough resources, and there is. And there's 10 or 20% unemployed in the United States, so there's labor sitting there that could actually say, let's rebuild all of the homes that were built from 1960 and earlier, and except for heritage homes, and let's make everything new. Because we have the resources, we can put people to work.
Mm-hmm.
But the bankers say, sorry, you owe me all these numbers, money, in quantities that are so large no human being could spend it. So that's our problem. The bankers are the biggest problem. And what Obama did by bailing them out and making them richer and giving these comptrollers, letting them take, you know, it was on CNN, $1.4 to $4 billion salaries, this is the worst, the worst that could happen.
So these children you talked about, were they, they're considered by some people star children or indigo children? In some cases, and others, like you said, they're probably classified as ADD when they're not.
Well, just like you say, for example, this boy Pablo that we interviewed in Phoenix, he's been on you know, NBC News and some of these different TV shows. He sees ghosts. He sees balls of light. And his doctors say he's schizophrenic, and they give him lots of drugs, and he still sees them. See, we don't see that as an opportunity. I say an opportunity to create a dialogue with higher intelligences to teach us how we can evolve. You see, we don't see that that's an opportunity. We see that's a problem. We don't know that Einstein actually had dialogues with this universe. We don't know that Max Planck, the godfather, the Nobel Prize winner,
modern physics,
the godfather of Einstein and quantum physics, said the universe was intelligent. See, we don't teach our kids this stuff.
It's like we want to deny so much.
We want to deny so much, and then we say, let's go back in the box, because the box says I can't go faster than the light, and that you're crazy because you're talking to angels. And then the box, this is what the box produced. This, you know, the world's falling apart right now. You know, Spain is and Greece are going bankrupt. California and Arizona are bankrupt. They have to, you know, and yet there's resources there. There's all the things the dollar represents. But sorry, the bankers say, you can't move it because you owe me too much money.
So, it's like we need to get rid of that system.
Obama doesn't have the courage to do what Ron Paul would do, which is to audit the Federal Reserve, get rid of the central bankers, get rid of the debt, create a new currency, and move forward, because there's really lots of money in our culture. There's more of it than ever. There just aren't the dollars to attach to what the dollar is supposed to represent. So the American people are being ripped off, completely ripped off by these bankers.
Mm-hmm.
This is the richest country in the world. This is where the computer, the airplane, the automobile, the rocket ship, this is where everything happens first.
Well, we got to take another break, and I hate to break into it. We've got another 7 minutes when we come back. We're going to take a break with my special guest, David Cerita. Please stay tuned.
Really gonna rock. We're rocking you hard, rocking you often. KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Let me tell you about a place that you wanna go to, where fantasy and guilty pleasures all come true. His name is Fender, and he's the king of the green room, with McLovin in the oven with all his tattoos. It's the
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
Den of Sin.
With a big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and her friend. Painted black or white, all full of fear. Jägermeister's always welcome here. Sunday night is unsigned prime time. Better check it out or pay the price. It's the
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
Den of Sin.
With a big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and a friend.
Den of Sin.
With a big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and a friend.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy with your host Earl Benazet and my special guest David Cerita, and talk about mind opening and eye opening. Go ahead, David.
You know, I mean, Earl, in my life, I have been, you know, from a relatively poor family, even though my mother's an attorney and my uncle's a Superior Court judge in Canada and my dad's a psychologist. But we, as a family, have all wanted to know the truth, the real truth. And, you know, I was very, very physically fit when I was young from tree planting. I was one of the best skiers around in my day, you know, in the 1970s and 80s and 90s. I could ski moguls at 35 miles an hour, and I jumped off 35-foot cliffs. I skydived 200 times. I've done high-altitude skydiving.
Cool.
But I can tell you that all those things that are kind of perfections in the physical world, like, you know, mastering a sport, you know, I was never interested in competing in the Olympics. And I think mogul skiing in the Olympics today is kind of a joke, because it's more of a trick show and they're all man-made moguls. But nevertheless, mastering meditation. I mean, think of a kung fu master who gets their black belt and it takes them 8 years, you know, to get it. And I've been meditating every day for 30 years, doing all sorts of different techniques and putting hours and hours and hours of practice. and I'm still not considered a master. I have not reached the seventh level of the superfields, which is where Nirvana, the Buddhist Nirvana, starts. But I have been close, and I describe it in my movie The Voice, what it's like to experience that. But I can tell you from the high or the adrenaline or what you get out of mastering a sport or, you know, perfecting something in the world, nothing compares in even one grain of sand to a trillion grains to what I've experienced in meditation. There's no experience, there's no human experience. Even though meditation can integrate into love and relationship, the cosmic consciousness, the levels of ecstasy and love and peace, and there are qualities in cosmic consciousness that have no name. There's nothing that touches it. And I think we've really lost in our world. We have lost the exercises and the techniques that are available in our various different religions that monks and nuns and priests and even family men and women used to practice that can give you these extended superhuman-like abilities. And for those of you who want to experience it, who really want to experience it, I encourage you to either do the meditations that I have on my website that are MP3 downloads, or learn how to meditate in your own tradition, and do it every day. You know, we can see that our religions and our churches have failed us in so many ways. They've made billions and billions of dollars off of us, and there's all these scandals of money abuse and sex abuse in our different churches and religions. We need to take religion into our own hands, into our own soul, and educate ourselves on what is possible for the divine human potential in each one of us. And that's what my documentary films are about. They're about scientific proof to prove to you that there's a huge transformation that happens in each and every one of us when we meditate, when we do these techniques. And then there's the experiential evidence that it is very, very real. And now I have done a whole new series of work on putting harmonic information in stone jewelry pendants, actual pendants that you can wear. And we have done scientific studies on the human aura before and during a person making contact with one of our pendants, and there's a huge change in the aura when you see it on the different aura cameras that we use.
Interesting.
And we've done a lot of scientific studies to see how and why certain stones were used in rituals from the Old Testament, you know, the stone altar, the unhewn, non-man-made stone altar that God, you know, instructed Moses to build, to the stone churches, and why Stonehenge, and now how you can put vibes, real vibration, electronically vibrate it on a deep, deep process into stone, and it stays there. At Stanford University in 1993, they put movies in crystals. They're saying wow. Crystals are going to be the hard drives of the future.
That's
because
amazing.
They have more memory information than regular hard drives. So there's a lot more to talk about, but you know, people can find out everything on my website there at voiceentertainment.net.
Well, I definitely want to have you back, that's for sure, when your schedule permits. I know you're a busy man. I've been trying to get you on my show for months. And once it was my producer's problem because there weren't any available. And well, now that I kind of do my own recording and they just help out with the final process, that makes it easier.
Yeah.
Where are you going? Are you going to be at any conventions soon or any?
I just attended, you know, Bob Brown's International UFO Congress. And that Congress has now moved to Phoenix next year with a new company. Mm-hmm. He did it for 22 years and so he's done now. Mm-hmm. And just a wonderful guy. You know, I kind of get notices once in a while, but I have nothing planned.
Okay.
I live in Sedona, Arizona, so if people, you know, if you sign up on my website, lightstreamtechnologies.com is where my pendants are, or voiceentertainment.net is where they can enter their email. And if they're interested in attending seminars with me, then they can just write me and get on my list. Mm-hmm.
That place in Sedona, is that, trying to remember the name of it, where they make the bells?
Bells.
Yeah, it's, I'm trying to remember the name of it. Arcosante.
Yeah, Arcosante. Yeah, I've been there. That's not far from here. You know, that was a vision of Paolo Soleri, the Italian architect, to build a super modern solar powered city. And you know, he started building, he has some incredible design concepts, but nobody gave him the funding he needed to really do what he really wanted to do. So it kind of turned into an artsy pottery community, and they don't even have solar power there. So
wow, that's a shame. Because it looked like it was going to really be cool.
Yeah, that was big news in the 1970s, you know, that he was going to do that.
Well, we've got to leave, and I hate to stop the show because I could talk for hours and hours. But it's been a pleasure having you on the show, David.
Thank you, Earl.
And hope we can get you back soon. Have a good night, and thanks for listening, folks. And hope you like this show, and send me your comments if you can. It's on the website on www.strnradio.com. Have a good night.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.